All right, I'm going to play a soundbite of our next guest. He gave a speech on the House floor recently. It's Congressman David Swikert, Arizona. Great guy. Love this dude. Very, very smart gentleman. And he's sounding the alarm bells about something that, frankly, besides him and his good friend and my good friend, Congressman Massey and maybe Senator Rand Paul, nobody's really talking about. Listen to this.
And you start to look at some of the lunacy that we get from our friends on the left. Oh, let's just tax more. Even 100% tax rate on small businesses and upper income families. You can't even come close. You can't. So take all their money and just assume that you live in some magic fantasy world where everyone keeps working. Or the small, just let's live in fantasy. This is what you get. My spending in 30 years is, my borrowing is about 12.4% of GDP. If I take every dime of someone who makes $500,000 or more, the next dollar, we just take it. You get about 5% of GDP. And that's pretending people would keep working.
Welcome to the program, Congressman David Swikert of Arizona, sir. How are you, my friend?
Oh, it's good to hear your voice, Leland.
I got to be honest with you. Much as I love talking to you, this is scary as hell. The broader speech was even scarier. You've been ringing this bell. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No. Look, the political class, a pox in all of our heads. We often tell the voters what they want to hear. But if you and I got up in front of one of your audiences and said, for the today through the next 30 years, where does 100% of the future debt, according to Congressional Budget Office, come from? And how much is it? How many of them would look at you and say, well, it's going to approach about $120 trillion in today's dollars. Mm-hmm. 75% of it is the shortfall in Medicare. 25% is the shortfall in Social Security. The rest of the budget has a positive balance.
That's insane. Because what you're pointing out is where this problem lies. And nobody wants to talk about it. And the problem lies in demographics. It lies in an aging generation that has an enormous health care bill coming due. And no one is talking about the effect of that on the overall cost to run the United States.
We got old, and healthcare costs continue to be out of control. Now, the elegance here is it's both terrifying, but if you were willing to stop the stupid game of, well, if we got this happened to me at a function this morning. Nice woman gets up. She's all upset at my presentation. You know, if you'd get rid of foreign aid, we would be just fine. Well, turns out I have a slide on that. I have a slide on everything. And I go to the slide and say, every dime of foreign aid is about 12 days of borrowing, not spending, borrowing in the federal government. What would you like to do with the rest of the year? I can add in all the money for Ukraine. Okay, there goes about 18 days of borrowing. You walk through all the different folklore. So the Democrats say, well, if we tax rich people more, or if we tax businesses more, and Republicans often say waste and fraud and foreign aid, we should do, okay, maybe you should do all those things. Drops in the bucket compared to the scale of debt we have because of our demographics.
Do your colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle get mad at you for talking about this?
I find my colleagues on the left get hypersensitive because I have the charts where I show all their ideas and that all their taxes, all their nationalization, all this, it doesn't get you about 40% of the way, but you also crash the economy.
Right.
So you got to pretend that the economy keeps working even though you're taking everyone's money. And on the Republican side, we're terrified to often get up in front of an audience and say, it's healthcare costs. 75% of the $100+ trillion of debt we're going to add over the next 30 years, 75% is just the shortfall in Medicare. So are you willing to engage in some creative, technology-loving ideas that crashed the price of healthcare. Because this doesn't have to be dystopian. There's a path where you could actually make our lives freer, healthier, a lot more efficient, and you can crash the price of healthcare. You just have to legalize the technology.
Okay, I want to come back to that because I think this is an important component of the conversation. But I do want to zoom in on one of the biggest problems we have politically in America right now. You mentioned the left is hypersensitive because they just want to have a boogeyman of rich people and successful people. And that's their easy out. It's just blame the rich, tax the rich, we're good. The Republicans, however, have a demographic problem with their voter base. And that is that their voter base is exactly the people that we're talking about in terms of these costs. And because of our knee-jerk politician or our knee-jerk political atmosphere, if you open your mouth at a political event and just say the word Medicare, doesn't matter what comes after it. The assumption is, both in the media as well as amongst the audience and voters, is often that you plan to cut it. Doesn't that create part of the problem of having the conversation we're about to have?
Yeah. I'm blessed. I represent an amazing population. I have Scottsdale and North Phoenix, but I'm also one of the biggest swing districts in America. I'm in a 50-50 district.
Right.
But I have an incredibly well-educated district, so they sort of tolerate me. and I've been trying to have a very honest conversation. We have a family motto, the math always wins.
Right.
And at some point, the math will win. So if I came to you tomorrow and said, okay, I have $120 trillion of borrowing, according to the Congressional Budget Office, coming in the next 30 years, on top of the $31 trillion we already have. What would you do if I came and said 75% of that is just healthcare costs? How about a couple crazy ideas? Let's start with the simplest one that's easy to visualize. The thing you can blow into that instantly tells you you have a virus. Instantly can categorize it, instantly bounce off your medical records on your phone, and instantly order your antivirals and Lyft or Uber drops them off at your house 2 hours later. That technology exists today. It's just illegal.
So,
and there's a reason you didn't go to Blockbuster Video last weekend. Technology changed.
Right, right. Is the reason this kind of technology is illegal because, I'll just say big healthcare as a sort of general umbrella term, has a vested interest in it not being legal because it keeps you going? Because what you're describing is a way to physically not even go to the doctor, get the medications and treatment you need, never leave your house, never spread the virus, deal with the issue, and never spend $200 in a copay to go visit a doctor for 5 minutes in a room full of other sick people. I mean, is that why?
I need you to think bigger. And,
okay,
you know, the concept of having biopsy or technology, I mean, even at the Consumer Electronics Show last week, they had the thing that floats in your toilet.
Right.
That actually can, you know, so you can visualize that one. But there's a thing you can lick on. There's a thing you can prick your finger. And
let's just not get the two confused, the one that sits in the toilet, the one you – let's not – yeah, let's be very careful.
This is really – but in many ways – it's optimistic, but it's far beyond big healthcare because, oddly enough, a lot of big healthcare, a lot of big insurance is actually shockingly creative and willing to play the discussion.
Okay.
But it turns out, how about the real estate investors who invested in the dirt underneath the urgent care center?
Right.
Well, they spent a fortune over the last decade trying to stop telehealth because people wouldn't walk in, you would use your phone.
Right.
How about the company that sells the bonds to build the new hospital?
Right.
They're upset because you don't need the new – healthcare is not the physical building. It's how it's keeping you healthy. So you need to understand when this much of our gross domestic product goes into healthcare, much of that money isn't actually making you healthy. It's the air conditioning bill.
Right.
It's the paving of the parking lot.
Right.
It's the real estate underneath. So you need to understand the scale. The other ones I'll give you are also maybe a bit more utopian, but we're on the cusp of miracles. There's some literature out there right now that there's a company, I think based out of San Diego, that has now functionally cured six people of type 1 diabetes with a type of stem
wow.
cell that's been altered by CRISPR, so the body doesn't see it as foreign, so there's no anti-rejection drugs, and
right.
getting islet cells producing insulin again. Now, it's still early. It's less than a
right.
year, so we're concerned about long-term efficacy. A diabetes is 33% of all healthcare spending in the United States.
Right.
And most of that's type 2. But the concept of, hey, you have type 2. Are you willing to work yourself back to health? And if your body doesn't start producing insulin again, we have a way to turn your body back on. Cures, it turns out, cures are incredibly moral. And 5% of our population is over 50% of our healthcare spend.
Wow.
What happens when we know how to cure hemophilia now. We're on the verge. We have, looks like, the cure for sickle cell anemia. We're making huge progress on cystic fibrosis. We may be on the cusp of knowing how to get the body to produce islet cells again for diabetes. It turns out part of the cure for U.S. being buried in debt is curing people.
Making people healthier, and we get
yeah.
a healthier balance sheet. I feel like what you're saying to me is to look beyond just the healthcare sector to the economy that's grown up around it for potentially
yeah.
the culprit that is holding back moving in this specific direction. So I have to come back to this question then. What stands in the way? Because there isn't really a single one-handed boogeyman that you can point to when it's this. It might be a little bit of pharma, because they don't necessarily want people cured of diabetes because they sell insulin, right? It might be a little
yeah.
bit of the healthcare provider, but it might be a lot of the everything else you said. But at the end of the day, what is barring us from listening to what you're saying right now and saying, hey, that sounds like a great idea. If we invested in the kind of infrastructure and technology that took us to a leaner, meaner health system that cured things, solved problems, and moved fluently throughout this process, what's stopping us from taking that step? What is standing in your way?
One of our other family sayings is money, power, vanity. But at least in Washington, D.C., it's mostly about the money. Think of it. Telehealth, just your ability to grab your phone and talk to a medical professional on FaceTime, or have your watch collect your data and using that for telehealth, was one of the most lobbied against pieces of legislation up till the time of the pandemic. And then we threw in telehealth as because people couldn't travel because of the virus.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you do realize the expansion of telehealth goes away the day the pandemic is officially declared over.
Right, right.
It's about the money.
Right.
It's always about the money.
So,
and how do you convince a lot of the, you know, you're in Denver, one of the more creative communities in the nation when it comes to technology.
Right.
How do you get some of your entrepreneurs to get off their hiney and say, you need to now be part of the political debate of saying there's a better, faster way and dramatically cheaper way.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, it's really good in keeping the United States from having a debt crisis and a failed bond auction.
So I feel I hear everything you're saying, and I think it's wonderful, but not playing devil's advocate, but don't take this the wrong way. But I feel like there's probably a lot of people that are going, screw it. I'll just get what I can get because this whole ship's going down, because it doesn't feel like in our current political climate that everything you say, which to me is common sense. There's no common sense doesn't rule the day. We don't make decisions based on common sense in politics today. So what do we do? Like, I mean, do we just get what we can get and get the hell out? Or do we try to save this thing? And what's step one?
Well, step one is actually having an activist populace, a voting populace that thinks beyond 1990s political ideas.
Okay.
And I know I'm being a bit of a jerk here, but I've got a lot of caffeine and I'm cranky.
It's okay.
but the number of times I will get in front of an audience and show them the debt slide, and they'll just scream things like, well, cut foreign aid. Okay, we already talked about that. That only
right.
is a rounding error. The scale of what we're talking about is a structural
mm-hmm.
$2 trillion deficit a year in 10 years from now.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and you look at them and say, well, okay, and they somehow magically think, well, if you cut waste and fraud, if you get rid of this program, a lot of those things are stuff we should get rid of. Federal government is far, vastly too big.
Right.
But it's our demographic. So how do you get activists to think revolutionary, creative? There's a reason you did not go, and I keep using it, but it's a simple visual, to Blockbuster Video last week.
Yeah.
Netflix came along, and all of a sudden we now stay at home and we push buttons.
Yeah. We need a Netflix of this for this issue. And I look, man, everything you said resonates with me, and it's terrifying to watch the speech at the beginning, and then when you start listening to your solutions, it's like, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel. I feel like, David, that we've had what needs to be one of several conversations, because I feel like we just scratched the surface, and sometimes I hate the fact that, you know, we have commercial breaks we have to deal with, although it keeps me paid and all that kind of stuff. But still, I feel like we've had one of what needs to be several conversations on this issue, because I want people to be thinking about this, and the only way to really get them thinking about it is to talk about it.
Look, Leland, as we're getting towards the debt ceiling, we're going to have the discussion of cuts. The other part of the fraud we have to work at is what's a real cut and what's just saying, I'm going to reduce spending on this Medicaid program, but I'm going to make the state pay for it.
Right.
That's
right.
Not a cut. We need to change the cost.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so right, man. I'm really glad I had you on. And we're going to post this in a podcast because I think people need to hear this conversation. Will you, though, come on and have a part two with me?
Oh, look, I'm elated anyone's crazy enough to want to listen to this.
Well, I it's the kind of stuff we need to be thinking about. It's really good stuff. Congressman David Schweikert of Arizona, thanks so much for your time, my friend. We'll talk again very soon, okay?
Thank you for having me.